By the way, we're recording the conference call, if some of you might want to take that into consideration when you're making your comments. So I like that it was an easy read. I like that he's 35 years old, and that's why I picked the book, because it had something to do with retailing, but not exactly, you know, not what we do on a day-to-day basis. And that he was successful, and I loved the beginning parts where he talked about the worm farm, and you know, he went through a lot of disappointments and a lot of failures, but he didn't give up. And I read an interview with him after I read the book, and he said that he believes that the entrepreneurial spirit starts at age 12. And I can kind of relate to that, because I was the kid that was selling, you know, my parents' stuff on my sidewalk with lemonade, like, you know, he tells that story. So I think that's true, and I think for a lot of our retailers, once you get to know them in our shopping centers, you find that they too were entrepreneurial. Our mom and pops I'm speaking about were entrepreneurial at a young age, and I think that that's an interesting thing to know and to learn about our tenants, because I go on to read and learn in this book about startups, and if we are dealing with startups, with our mom and pops, I think it's important to figure out or to ask them and be curious, you know, when did their entrepreneurial spirit start? Because if it did start at an early age and they've been through lots of ideas that have been successful or not been successful, that might help us qualify our prospects and our tenants in a way that we've never considered before. Versus I've had tenants that were, you know, IBM accountants and got big pensions and then came and opened a business and it didn't work. You know, they ended up, it wasn't successful. And this is just a thought that I never considered before, which I thought was interesting. I wanted to throw out a question to the audience, for any of you that want to jump in. I wanted to find out, what was the most useful trait that you guys thought the author embodied that you could adapt to the business that we're in? And I will share with you, we have leasing agents on the call, we have owners of business on the calls, we have a couple mortgage brokers on the call. So I think it's going to be, we might get some varied answers. But does anyone want to jump in and share with me what you thought that Tony Hsieh's, one of his character traits that you thought you could use in what you do on a day-to-day life? Nobody. Andrew?
No, I have not read the book, so I'm not going to comment.
Okay, no problem. One of the things that I thought was interesting that I could relate is this out-of-the-box thinking. In one part of the book, he talked about he had to do a report in school, and he had to do it on a sonnet or a haiku, and instead of actually doing the haiku or the sonnet, he did the report in Morse code, which I thought was very creative and very out of the box. And I think that we when we're doing leasing, if we thought more outside the box, I think we could get more deals done. I in my career and now doing some coaching and training that I'm doing, I find that we're sometimes not doing thorough listening to the prospect and even to our clients. And if we did more listening and we kept our minds more open and we were more creative and we thought more outside the box, I think we could get more leases signed and fill more occupancy. And so that was that was one of the things that his out-of-the-box thinking, even as he was in Harvard, you know, I thought that was something that we could all take from the book and use in our business. Another question that I had was, what did anyone who read the book find something that was surprising in the book? Anyone have anything to share that they thought was surprising?
I'll jump in. This is Alana.
Hi.
Hi. What I thought was fascinating about it was how important the importance he placed on culture and creating a culture in his company, and just relating that to the real estate world. Even though we're not all a part of the same company, we are all in the same industry, and you know, you can kind of create a culture with the people that you deal with on a regular basis, and you know, just have a more welcoming and open and honest and candid relationship with the people that you deal with on a regular basis, and just have a lot more fun.
I think, you know, in one part of the book, for those of you that haven't had the chance to read it, he talks about a sharing versus hoarding mentality. And along with connectivity. Thank you, Alana. I agree. I think that the more we share as an industry, you know, when I first started in the industry, everyone was very protective of their information. And you can see as we progress, and, you know, as recently as Hugh Chen coming up with this Leeds community database a couple years ago, sharing and the connecting through the sharing is very can be very profitable for all of us. Instead of keeping all of those calls that we were all getting, by sharing them, more deals are done, and if more deals are done, the industry as a whole is healthier. And I absolutely agree with that. I thought also, you mentioned culture in our industry. He has a culture of being very open with his vendors, which, again, in the shoe industry, as he talks about in the book, it was completely frowned against. No one did anything like what he was suggesting, and I'm not suggesting that I understand the shoe business, but he briefly discussed how in the industry the openness of communication with his vendors was absolutely frowned upon, and I thought that kind of could relate to us with our tenants. I mean, obviously, and he talks about there's a negotiation that you must have with your vendors, between companies and vendors, but the more that you're open and the more that you can explain your expectations with each other, the longer...
Welcome to Verizon Wireless. The wireless customer you called is not available at this time. Please try to call again later. Announcement 1-80-2.
Not sure what that is, but hopefully
welcome
that's...
Welcome to Verizon Wireless.
Oh, no.
The wireless
company
called is not available at this time. Please try your call again later. Announcement 1-80-2.
Hopefully that won't keep repeating, you guys. I apologize. So the vendor relationship with the retailer, I think, can be... we can learn something from that with tenants. I find that certainly, you know, there's a negotiating part of our... I don't know. Sorry, guys. Anyway, we'll keep going. Then another question I had for anyone that read the book is, would this be a book you'd recommend, and for who would you recommend it to? For example, I thought it would be a fabulous book to give to our mom-and-pop retailers that are startups, or even if they just have one store. I thought, you know, for $13, it's a pretty cheap gift, and maybe it's a gift you give to a mom-and-pop that just opens their doors for business instead of the obligatory plant, you know, that may die. This is something that I think they could learn a lot from and get a lot out of. Anybody else have any thoughts on that?
This is Courtney Kowalczyk. I think that's a great idea to give it to mom and pop vendors. I mean, I think, you know, the negotiation tool that, and keeping an open communication with vendors and retailers is great. And I also loved how he talked about how he treated vendors, how, you know, typically it was looked at as not giving as much respect to the vendors, but he took a completely different approach. And I thought that was very refreshing and great to hear that he wasn't only adapting it to his company and culture, but also to who he worked with. And I think by sharing a book like this to our retailers and vendors is a great way to just continue to pass it on, as an example was used in the book, of the instead of a kindness, a wowness factor. I think vendors and retailers, mom and pops, really anyone that's in business, I think it would be a perfect gift to, perfect price, and there's a lot of insight you can get professionally as well as personally from the book, I thought.
Yeah, and I think that we talk about a lot that if the retailer is successful and their sales are driven by anything we can help them do, obviously that helps with the rent, because we know obviously that rent is a function of sales. And then in turn, it obviously helps with the value of our shopping centers. And, you know, it's just, again, it's something different. I don't know how many shopping center owners are handing out books to their mom-and-pop retailers. You know, welcome to our shopping center. You know, you might enjoy this. And for those of us that have third-party clients, to say that we're doing something like that, I just think it's something different. And I think that people appreciate when those of us that are trying to do something different think out of the box, and it helps with the relationship too, especially as we all know, when mom and pops first open or are struggling to get open in our shopping centers, it's not always the best of times, because they're always overestimating the time they can get open. You know, they only have so much money in the bank, and if their rent starts and they're not open. So to hand them a book of with this 35-year-old who has started many businesses, and I think it's something that we could all do, and I think we'd get rave results from that. What I loved in the book also was, you know, our industry boasts probably the one of the highest turnovers of all industries. And I thought it was fabulous that Zappos has almost zero turnover. And I cracked up when all the stories about the ice cube, the guy that had the humor that he brings to his life, his daily life and his company, and the part of having fun. Sometimes we're all so busy and focused, and we don't take the time to stop and, you know, have a good laugh. And some of the stories in the book I thought were hilarious, were that he had the client get up in front of the room and do the Macarena. I laughed. I think I was on an airplane and laughed out loud, because we've all had those clients that are pretty, you know, boring, or suited up, you know, three-piece suit, and to have, you know, put them in that situation. Some of you, I know, on the call were on the bus tour that we had, that Gary and Larry had, I don't know, a few months ago. And, you know, being on the bus for 8 hours and, you know, hearing long, boring moderators about, you know, the statistics of shopping centers. And, I just got a bug in, you know where, and I figured that let's, you know, start singing. And it was so, we had such a great time. People were cracking up. You know, we sang, some girly song to the guys, and then the guys turned around and sang "You've Lost That Love and Feeling," and then we did some Grease duet back and forth to each other. And, you know, you had kids that were 25 years old, brand new in the business, and you had people, as you know, like me, that had been 25 years in the business. And then we had a guy on the bus who was 65, and I thought, this guy is not going to go for this, but he was singing along with the rest of us. So, you know, you can't take yourself too seriously. Here's a guy that went to Harvard. And there's a great quote in the book, which I loved. You know, everyone knows I'm very proud of my alma mater, Florida State, but I was surrounded in my career of people that, you know, went to Harvard and these Ivy League schools. And early on in my career, I was very careful about the words that I tried to be careful about the words I chose. And, you know, I'm not using the high level vocabulary I should. I read this quote. I thought it was perfect. It's on page 183, and it says, "It's more fun to talk with someone who doesn't use long, difficult words, but rather short, easy words like 'What about lunch?'" And it's, you know, Winnie the Pooh. And I think that's so important, because when you're trying to think of these big vocabulary words and you're trying to impress these people, whether they're, you know, the head of real estate of some retailer or the head of a life insurance company, you know, we really just need to be ourselves. And if you work hard and you're honest and you have passion for what you do, that's going to be more important than the word choice that you use. And obviously, we don't want to speak, you know, with improper grammar, but I find that a lot of young kids that I coach are nervous about this, and they're nervous about speaking. And I think he wrote the book. In the beginning of the book, he said, "You know what? I wrote this book and I didn't have an editor, and I'm going to write it the way I talk, and, you know, hopefully you won't be offended by it." And I like that. Anybody have any thoughts about that? The other thing I thought was great in the book is when he went to the shoe show. when they were trying to build up the business. And, you know, we all can so relate to this. He said he went to 80 shoe retailers and he got 3 successful responses. So everyone knows I love my formulas and how many people are we going to canvas and how many people are going to be interested. And right there, you know, I read a lot and I read a lot of business books and a lot of autobiographies. And I think it's the first time I read somewhere where someone actually was like actually canvassing at a trade show, which we do a few times a year. And that's 3 people out of 80. But look, he didn't give up, and we can't give up either. And if you just keep at it, you will be successful. And I love that. I thought that was great. I thought that that the part on I think in the middle of the book, and he talks about networking, and yeah, it's on page 82, and he says that pull it up. I thought this was great. It says, if you are able to figure out how to truly be interested in someone you meet with the goal of building up a friendship instead of trying to get something out of that person, the funny thing is that almost always something happens later down the line that ends up benefiting either you, your business, or yourself personally. So he says, my advice is to stop trying to network, quote unquote, in the traditional business sense, and instead just try to build up the number and depth of your friendships, where the friendship itself is its own reward. The more diverse your set of friendships are, the more likely is you'll derive both personal and business benefits from your friendships later down the road. You won't know exactly what those benefits will be, but if your friendships are genuine, those benefits will magically appear 2 to 3 years later down the road. And you know, a lot of you on the call know my canvassing karma, but I believe that. I think that if you walk into a retailer and you're sincere, and you really want to be curious, he talks about that in the book, be curious about, you know, the prospective client and learn about them. And a lot of times, you know, we all know that people don't do business with you unless they like you and trust you. So you really have to build that likability factor and get them to trust you. And what a better way for those two things to happen is if you ask them about yourselves and you allow them to talk and you are truly and sincerely curious about who they are and how they got where they are and where are they going. And then maybe they're not the right tenant at the time for your property. Maybe you think they're the right tenant for your friend's property down the street. And you can forward that information or call that leasing agent and suggest that they go speak to them. And it's I think that our industry is moving more towards this, which I'm thrilled about, than where it was 20 years ago when I started. And it wasn't anything like that. Did anyone on the call see those changes in our industry occurring? Andrew, what do you think? Andrew, what do you think about networking and meeting people as friends and getting to know them as friends?
Well, absolutely. I mean, just to fill everyone in briefly, Beth has been training me for about a year now, and I've been doing canvassing up in a secondary market up in outside of Tampa, Florida, in a center that was about 25% occupied in a section of Palm Harbor, Florida, that was replete with shopping centers and a lot of vacancy and not a lot of activity. And the canvassing started basically just by getting out there and just meeting people and dropping off flyers and trying not to be too salesman-y and just, you know, hey, you know, just, you know, let's, and talking about their businesses and how things are and, you know, dropping off articles from time to time and then really just honing in on a few uses that, you know, really would benefit the center. And it's definitely, at this point, you know, we're heading to 80% leased as a result of a lot of these are like friends that, you know, we've become friends. One is a fitness studio where the woman, you know, it's her own business and, you know, we've gone to dinner. I've taken her fitness classes. I've done personal training with her. I mean, you really get yourself immersed in their business and they love to talk about their businesses and show you their businesses. And then, you know, the business part almost comes easy, but you have to really foster those relationships for a long period of time and not go in and just, you know, show them what you have and like you're trying to get something from them, but it does turn around, but it just takes a bit of time. So I absolutely agree with what you're saying.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm so proud. 80%. Good job.
Beth?
Thanks.
Yep.
This is Jill, and I'm not in your industry, but I'm in marketing, and I didn't read the book, so I apologize. But just to pick up on your point about social being part of business, what does he say and what do people say about, you know, how are you using social media? How has that changed the concept of networking?
Great point. It, you know, I'm not a big social media person. I'm not a Twitter person, and I probably should get on the stick one of these days. But what I thought was really interesting, and I never thought about it before until I read it in the book, was they have a big focus on customer service. It's huge. It's huge for them. And, you know, they want to make their customers happy to the point that they do things, you know, I don't think this was in the book, but I heard about it. I heard about this at one of the conferences where someone was speaking about Zappos, where they said, if you call Zappos and say, where's the nearest pizza restaurant to where I'm at, they'll look it up for you and call you back. I mean, so they're very big on customer service. But how he talks about social media involved with customer service is these days, people Twitter, you know, constantly about bad service. And the word spreads ever so quickly, you know, a million times more than it did ever before. And they also, I think, Twitter or do Facebook or, you know, comment online about good service too. But I think that more so people, you know, they say that more people speak negatively or want to share negative stories than they do positive. So that we have to work that much harder because of the social media and the rapid fire of communication that spreads throughout. So if you are great at what you do, you know, your brand of whatever your brand is can spread even faster through social media. And I thought that was a great thing in the book that I never thought about, how social media is changing businesses on a, you know, daily basis. The other thing I thought, what I enjoyed about the book is, you know, talk about a guy, and, you know, at the first webinar we had back in January about setting goals. You know, this guy is my hero on setting goals, whether, you know, he wants to buy 100 worm farms or, you know, he wants to do the button business to all the way he wants to get $1 billion in sales with Zappos in, you know, in 10 years. And he's a day by day, he's not sure if he's going to make it. And this is a guy that to reach his goals, he's going all in. You know, he sold his computer company online, you know, it was like an internet company to Microsoft, and he had the ability to stay on for an extra year, and he decided after a few months hitting the snooze button, you know, one morning that he wasn't happy anymore, and he walked away from $8 million, and later on he had, you know, money that he had gotten from that, I think it was in the 200 million range, and he pretty much invested all of it, and he got down to like the last 20 million that he needed, and he sold a bunch of his real estate to keep Zappos going. And obviously in the end it, you know, paid off, because the day that they merged with or Amazon bought them, the value of that stock trade that day was, or stock whatever, you know, stock business, that was $1.2 billion. So this is a guy that set goals, and I think at the time he was, you know, at the Amazon time, it was in, you know, early 30s. So set goals and, you know, went all in. And he talks, I know some people on the call had emailed me about the poker, commenting about the poker. You know, in the book, he takes some time off and he learns how to play poker, and he says a lot of the things in a lot of the skills you use in poker has a lot to do with, you know, the game of life and the game of business and the phrase all in. And he said, you know, with Zappos, I decided, you know, I knew I could make the money if I lost it all, and he just went all in. And I thought that that's important. It's important to have goals, whether your goal is, you know, a financial goal, whether the goal is you want to become a leasing director, whether your goal is you want to do a 100,000 square foot anchor deal, you know, whatever your goals are, Are you passionate about it, and are you doing what it takes, and are you all in on the goal? And go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I think that passion is like the key in this whole book. I mean, he's passionate about whatever he has laid before him. I mean, whether it's his Inner Exchange or whatever, his first company, and then with his poker, he was all in, and then and he was strongly invested with Zappos because he recognized their passion for this business, and he was like, I love their passion, and therefore I'm committed to continue to invest with them. And I think, and then he, at the end there, he was talking about how he was really passionate about learning about happiness. And I think that his goals and everything that he follows in his life is about his passion and whatever it is that he's focused on at the time. And I think that in itself is an inspiration to follow, like, your gut and what truly makes you happy. And therefore, everything will fall in place. And I thought that his parallels between poker and business and business and your personal goals, I think all the parallels basically came down to what are you passionate about, and follow that, and everything else will fall into place.
Absolutely. I loved when he said, okay, if I could make $20 million, what would I do with it? And he listed, you know, five things. And of the five things, four of them, he said, well, I have the money to do those now. You know what? He ended up saying, I enjoy building things and building companies and seeing things grow. And I thought that, and he kept saying, you know, he'd say, I want to do this. Well, why do I want to do it? You know, why do I want, if that's my goal, why is it my goal? And he said, I kept asking myself why and why and why and why. And at the end, he said, it makes me happy. That's why I do it, because it makes me happy. And I thought, that's a great, great exercise for all of us to do. If we have a goal, you know, he had a goal to climb Mount Kilimanjaro. And he wanted to accomplish that. And I think that we, with all of our goals, we could keep drilling down to say, why do I want to do that? You know, why do I want to make $100,000? Because it's going to give me what? And does that make me happy? I had lunch yesterday. A lot of you know Hugh Chen, and Hugh Chen and I had lunch together. And, you know, he just spent a year traveling. And I said, and I asked him, so what'd you learn about yourself on the trip? You know, I would have to believe that he had a lot to learn. And he said, you know, I learned that I could live I lived in one suitcase all around the world. And then he came back and traveled the United States. And he said, and then I came back to my apartment. I had all this stuff. You don't need stuff. You know, he said, media and family and friends make you think that you need stuff, but you really don't. And what's the most valuable thing he felt that he learned was that, you know, and some of you on the call who are, my former coworkers of mine, you know, my favorite saying is, time is your commodity. And he goes, I realized how valuable time is. That it's this resource you never get back, and you really got to spend your time doing things that make you happy and that you're passionate about, because that's the only thing that, you know, that we lose that we can never get back. And I thought that was great. And then he and I went on this whole discussion about retail, and how he said, do you remember, you know, we started talking about leasing and the industry, and he said, do you remember when all the anchor leases, and obviously some of them that are still in existence from years ago and maybe are still put in anchor leases, I'm not sure, but where it used to say that in every anchor lease, 50% of the shopping center was required to have retail tenants, not service and not restaurants and not office. And how interesting is that today? Because I think we would find that the majority of tenants are service tenants and restaurant tenants. I mean, there's some specialty centers that have more retail, but the typical, you know, supermarket anchored centers, obviously, as we all know, are filled with service tenants and restaurant tenants. And how the industry continues to change, and how we all need to do our jobs by keeping up with the changes and watching out for the trends and reading, whether it's the newspaper or books or, you know, discussing, you know, not even reading the books and just listening to a call like this so we can learn, you know, different things. And I thought that that was those two conversations that I had with him was very interesting. You know, another part in the book he says, which I loved, is I know I've got some company owners on the phone today, and I love this. He says he asks every employee of his firm, if you could just improve 1% a day. That's all. Just improve 1% a day. And if you have 200 employees and they're all improving, and he goes on to say, you know, it would be great if you could improve the company, if you could improve something at Zappos. But even if you just improve yourself, if you just take a class or do something 1% a day, think about how far we will be a year from now if everyone does that. And, you know, of course, I'm thinking, well, even if only half did it, how great would that be? But if that was a goal for all of us, that if every day we just did something 1% better, that would be fabulous. You know, and he talks about in his company that he likes servant leaders, you know, leaders that are, that serves the people on their team. So, and I think that's so true. I know I have more than a few directors of leasing on the phone calls, and a lot of them I talk to on an ongoing basis, and being a leasing director is one of the hardest jobs I ever had, and that I know friends of mine have had, and because, you know, we are leading a group of entrepreneurial, risk-taking, assertive, gregarious, enthusiastic, passionate people, and they all have their own different goals, and none of them have the same goals. None of them like to be rewarded the same. They all have different properties. They all are at different paths in their lives. And it's hard to be a servant leader because if you have 5 of them that work for you or 10 of them that work for you, it's a very difficult job to be on the money with every single one of them at all times. So those leasing agents that are on the phone that have leasing directors that you work for, sometimes, you know, you got to think about, put yourself in their shoes, because it's not an easy job, and it's a fun job, and it's a very rewarding job. It's someone said to me recently, why are you doing all of this? You know, well, what's in it for you? And, you know, I realized in the last few years that I've been doing a bunch of different things that my greatest joys are when I'm walking around the ICSCs and I see some of you that I used to work with or I, you know, spent time with and canvassed with, and, you know, you come up and tell me these stories. I just got, you know, we just had a Rookie to Rockstar workshop, and I know a couple of my workshop attendees are on the phone, and I got an email from one of them afterwards and said, canvassing karma, it works. You know, I was out canvassing today, and I got 2 LOIs in while I was out, and, you know, that just makes my day. Those types of things make my day. So even though it was a very challenging job, it's probably one of the most rewarding jobs because you help people reach their goals in ways that they never thought that they could reach. And that was also some parts of the discussion I talked about yesterday with Hugh. So how great. I'm sure, you know, we would all love to take a year off and travel the world and the United States, and maybe we can all do that if that's something that you're passionate about doing. Let's see. We talked about the curiosity, his ability to never give up. I thought he talked about a part in the book where he employed the call centers and having the ability to have the people have the freedom to make their own decisions. And I know, I think Nordstrom's has that as well. There was a part in the book that was hilarious where someone said, I want to test to see if Zappos is really, you know, as customer service friendly as possible. And the guy writes an email to like an online customer service guy, and he says, I'm talking in the third person. So let's say, you know, if it's like Beth wants to know, and basically the guy says, I'm Beth, but I want you to continue to speak to me in the third person. And the Zappos guy has this whole dialogue with the guy, you know, is Beth happy today? And I mean, it was hilarious. Again, I was laughing out loud on the airplane. So that was just very funny. And I know you have to believe that the guy sitting at his cubicle at the call center had a great time that day because the company allows him to have that flexibility and that independence to go with the flow and make the guy writing in on the email, you know, to help to laugh along with him. So I thought that was fun. Zappos also has a policy that everyone that gets hired goes through this whole training, the whole cultural, the training and the mission and all this stuff. And after, I think, a two-week training program, they offer everyone $2,000 to quit there and then. They said, we'll give you $2,000 and you can walk out the door and, you know, not continue to work here. And they, I think the statistics of who takes the $2,000 is almost next to nil. But I love that. I love that if they're the only there for the money, they're going to, for 2 weeks, go through the training and take the $2,000. So the people that they are hiring really, really, truly want to be there and are embracing the culture that they're signing up for. And I think they also said that they hire, that talent's important, but more important is the fact that they have a great attitude and they smile and that they're positive people. Because, and I'm a big believer in this too, you can train anybody on anything, but it's hard to take a negative attitude and turn it into a positive attitude. So I when I was researching this in the last few days as I was getting ready for the call, I had no idea, but this was on the Wall Street Journal's bestseller list for 27 weeks and the New York Times bestseller list for about the same amount of time. And it was on, it was the number one on the New York Times bestseller list 3 times. So I loved the book. Again, I thought it was a very easy read, which I liked because, as like we discussed, we're all busy. Someone had written in and said, let's do Good to Great. Good to Great is a great book, but it's a very difficult read. And frankly, I got through 60% of it and then listened to the rest of it on tape because it was just hard for me to get through. So my plan on these calls are to do easy books. I just finished reading the Stu Leonard book. When I was at the New York ICSE, I took a car and went up to Yonkers to see the Stu Leonard store, which I had never seen and I'd heard about for, 25 years of being in the business, which I think is important for us to see retailers around the country. When you're traveling, go check out a retailer you've heard of. So I just finished reading his book, and it's so funny how he talks about wowing people similar to Zappos. So in the future, I think that book will be on. Our next book is called The Power of Focus, and it is on, we've got to come up with a date. We'll send you an email for the date of the call, and it's written by Mark Victor Hansen and Jack Canfield. They're the powerful twosome that wrote all of the Chicken Soup for the Soul books, and I thought it was a great book for us to come back around because we all set goals a month ago, and The Power of Focus talks about how to accomplish and achieve your goals. So it's a good, it's less of a touchy-feely. It's more of action, more action steps. So, and it's a good book that you can kind of jump around in the book, look at the paragraph, look at the chapters that interest you and focus on those. So that will be our next book. And then for anyone that knows of someone that might be interested in the next Rookie to Rockstar workshop, it's on March 1st. And then lastly, in April, I'm going to be holding what's called the first Azor Academy, and we're going to be sending out the date, and that will be for college students getting ready to graduate. We're going to have a day of training, and at night we're going to have a reception where employers can come and meet the students. So thank you all so much for being on the call and listening to me jabber on. Thank you for everyone that contributed comments, and I hope you all learned something while we lunched and learned. Have a great day. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you.